president of basketball operations for the Golden State Warriors. He's a hell of a guy. Bob Myers with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Bob, how are you? All things considered, you and the family doing all right?
Yeah, good. Doing well. Thanks for you guys. Keep working. I know it's probably not easy from your houses, but I appreciate it. You guys are, a lot of people can't work. I can't do, our job is so much in person. But we still do stuff, but it's not, you guys are still working every day, it seems like, so I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's really not as hard as it may sound or look, but we very much appreciate that. Regardless, how does draft prep work for you guys as you continue to try to wade through all the uncertainty? I know there's a lot of stuff up in the air. We're not interested necessarily in getting into that, but you guys have a future to think about. I know the NFL's got this virtual draft taking place in a few days. Are you guys still continuing on with the process of talking to prospects? Are you using Zoom? How does that work?
Yeah, we're using Zoom. It's not perfect. It's imperfect, really. We have calls where we've got all our staff on it, front office staff, scouts. Steve was on the last call, Kurt. We did one last week, kind of ran through what we thought we might be looking at. We still don't quite know that much as far as when the draft would be and as far as what number, which is what it'll happen in time. We'll determine that. But we have an idea of the range of player. And so we've got a ton of time to study film. But as far as seeing guys, we're waiting to see when we're going to be able to do stuff like that, if at all, and interview guys. But it's really just now film, comparing notes from what you saw during the season. And we're seeing what everybody else sees. We see who comes out. We see who who's in the draft, who isn't. But until the combine's kind of something we got to wait and see on as well. And it'll be fascinating. Kerr said he talked to Pete Carroll. I guess he did a podcast about how the NFL teams are doing it. And maybe when the 49ers are done and the dust is settled, I might call John if it looks like we're heading. I have no idea what our draft will be. But just to say, hey, what would you have done differently? What was more difficult? Because I don't think anybody's been in this kind of situation before.
No question. And that's what I was going to ask, that same type of question. How much are you guys going to be watching the NFL draft? And how much will you guys pick up the phone? Are you guys calling? Are you calling not just players? I mean, not just front office, but is NFL working with the execs in the higher up as far as with the NBA as well?
A lot. It's going to be interesting. I don't know that you, well, you probably know a lot more than I do what happens in an NFL draft. I think it's kind of one of our drafts on steroids because the amount of rounds, the amount of information, the amount of people. I had heard that an NFL draft, there's maybe 100 people working on it within an organization, not all in a room, but maybe they have side rooms as far as we're taking a linebacker. Okay, so who's the scout that's seen the linebacker? Now who's seen this specific linebacker and what's the report on this guy? And so they have to kind of, their bandwidth as far as information is bigger than ours. We do two rounds, 60 players. Usually we draft more on just talent than need. I think football, as far as I can understand, tries to fill needs more. They've already done their free agency. We haven't done our free agency usually when the draft happens. So we don't have to say, like football does, we didn't get X player in free agency. We got to get him in the draft. So they have a lot of balls up in the air. They have more time between picks, obviously, more players to draft, more rounds. And so there's a lot of parallels, but there's some differences. And I'd love to just watch it one time. I won't be able to tell much from this one because I assume we'll be going back to regular drafts. But people I know have been and kind of been in the room around an NFL draft, they say it's fascinating. It's just fascinating.
Just from a war room standpoint and organizationally, and that's really my question for you, Bob, is organizationally, how tough is it right now to keep the front office on the same page and to keep the team on the same page? Is it Zoom meetings? Is it conference calls? What can you do to, with everyone working remotely, to try to keep the machine running as smoothly as possible?
It's tough, Dibs, because like I said before, we're so used to connecting physically as far as being in the same room, looking at each other. It's just a team. I mean, you guys are obviously not in the same room now, but that's kind of the best way to do your job. You can do what you're doing now. You do it well, but it's, and we're doing our best to do it, whether it's a Zoom call, phone calls on the side, things like that. But a team doesn't function that way. It's like your family trying to operate on Zoom calls. You can do it, but it's not the same as looking each other in the eye, having conversations. Obviously the coaches are really hampered right now because that requires physical contact. That requires interaction. So many times I show up at work And I feel like I have a couple things to do. And then I just walk down to the facility, and there's 50 conversations that lead to 50 different decisions you got to make. And that's just the way our job works. It's just different. We don't have line item agendas. We go in, what's going on today, and what do we need to talk about today, and what happened last night in the game, and who do we play next? And so it's really fast moving, but it's so personal. That's one of my favorite parts of the job, to be honest, is that part of the job. I chose the job where you get to interact with people, and not being able to is tough. Some people function in it better. We're doing what we can. But again, it's not certainly not the fun part. The fun has been somewhat removed.
Warriors president of basketball operations, Bob Myers, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Bob, did you get to watch the first two parts of the Jordan documentary last night?
Yeah, I know you got young kids. I don't ever get to watch anything live. I'm lucky if I get to watch our road games live, because it's just pandemonium with the three kids. It's just, so I sat there, and I think my wife was making dinner with my middle child, and I have three daughters, and so I was in the other room, and I said, I'm going to watch this thing. And I was excited to watch it, probably like you guys, because we're so famished for sports. And I got to about 12 minutes before there was kind of some kind of explosion and daddy. And so I started laughing. I said, that's pretty good, Brian, 12 minutes. And then I had to, it's not the time of my life where I get to have an uninterrupted 2 hours, but I did get to it later. And my wife, I pulled her in at the end and I said, you got to see some of this stuff. Cause my wife's not, she's not kind of living and dying with sports. She loves me, supports me, but she watches, and she's, you know, if this is what you love to do, I'll support it. So I was kind of talking to her as the end was coming on, and you can see all the drama of what was going on there. And she's kind of laughing, and I said, you know, it's crazy, because when you highlight, when you do things like this, and having been on in a situation where We were a good team. Obviously, we didn't win six titles and have it with the Bulls. And nobody can compare to Michael Jordan. But you realize how hard it is when you watch something like that. It reminds you how hard it is to keep something together. I mean, that was my takeaway from it. And I think a lot of people listening, it's hard to understand, because even Jordan himself said, you know, we're winning. Let us keep playing. Let us keep trying to do this. And they were. And they actually, obviously, everybody knows, won that year. But you realize in the midst of it all, what happens with great success and great notoriety and great attention and all the money and all the fame and all the egos, it's very hard. It's why bands break up. It's why you wonder, why'd that band break up? They kept making platinum albums. Or why'd that team break up? Because within all that, there's so many dynamics. And to keep it all aligned is work. And, you know, I heard you guys talking to BJ. There's very few players that get to win exactly on their own terms, exactly how they want to win. And Michael Jordan was one of them. But I would say 99% of players in the NBA and in the NFL get to do exactly what they want. Lowe probably wanted more touches. Okay, well, that's not what was the right thing, apparently. Or he wanted to catch the ball more, do whatever. A linebacker probably wants to play every play. It doesn't – you have to sacrifice. And I think what me seeing the first two episodes reminds me of is – when you're trying to win, you don't get to do it all on your own terms, but you do get to win. You want to play with Michael Jordan, yeah, he's going to score 50 points, and you might, on another team, average 15, but you're going to win the championship. And so it's fascinating to watch, and you get to see how, you know, looking at some of the Pippen stuff and some of the Discord, that even if I was looking at you three guys, and just to give an analogy, let's say all you three were young in the business and you were coming up and you wanted to be the best rated show in the country. And that's all you wanted to do your whole life. And you get there and you celebrate it and you guys are all buddies. And then you do it again. And now you're starting to make more money, be more famous. And all of a sudden somebody says or writes a story like, hey, Lowe, why aren't you making as much as Joe or as much as Div? And you all of a sudden start reading an article or thinking, why don't I look at the transcript. I didn't get to talk that much. You know, and after a while, the winning part gets a little lost, and it starts becoming, hey, what about me? And that's right. Where things disintegrate. And you probably are on teams like that, Lowe, where you got good teams, and you're kind of like, guys, let's just, yeah, you got to sacrifice a little bit. And unfortunately, I'm not even picking on the Bulls, because it's human nature. It happens to, right. I find it hard. It almost happens to everybody. Things have a lifetime and then they end. And that's the part I'm kind of looking at it right now watching.
Bob, well said. I mean, I tell these guys all the time, there's a book that I'm reading and nothing new under the sun in that great book. And it'll tell you all these things are always taking place. You can get some levity out of that. So I totally agree. When you're watching that, isn't that something you would want your team? Do you call guys? You say, man, check this out. Because if you watch, can't you see that some of these things can happen even now? They're going to continue to happen. And how do you as a person in the front office get guys to continue to understand it's not about it's not about you. It's about the whole circumference. It's about everybody in common. If we do that, we'll continue success.
That's a lesson, I think. And again, it's Michael Jordan. Everybody wanted to be Michael Jordan. Who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't want to be that guy? He's what you all grow up, you know, wanting to be. If you're a kid or whatever you are, you want to be the best player on the best team in the world. And that's what everybody wants. But who gets to actually do that? I mean, he might be one of the few guys in the world that got to actually do it how he wanted to do it. And Michael might even say, look, I could have scored 50 a night if I wanted to. I think he did reference, but that wasn't the best thing, and he had to figure that out too. But when you watch it, and what I would say to our players and when I talk to the guys, first of all, winning is extremely difficult. It is extremely difficult and mentally difficult, and to follow that path. And even Steve Kerr would say, I worked with B.J. Armstrong for 10 years, so we would talk about Jordan a lot, and he would tell me things that Michael did. And Steve said something interesting that he said, you know, Michael, when he left the first time, he said he did love baseball, but he also, the mental burden of the weight of what he had to do, he's like, it was so consuming, more than people understand. They think Jordan just walks around and it's easy to be that great and that competitive. You have to carry that with you. And he said Michael just needed to step away, like, and that's what allowed him to come back and get the other three. Because if you didn't have that break and pursue something else for a minute, it just wears you out. And so for our team watching it, and what you learn from it is that the Spurs say something really well. They say, you have to get over yourself. I think that's a really good line to win. You have to get over yourself, meaning that the most important thing always has to be winning. And that's the hardest thing now in a very kind of me era of athletics. Right. People talk about their brand, you know. I got to focus on my brand. That has nothing to do with winning, by the way. I mean, your brand has nothing to do with winning. And so when you interview a kid and when you talk to a kid and when you get a team together, the more you can use that word win. But I don't want to sound like somebody. I don't know how you feel, Lo. You played before, you know, a little older than me. I do think that's the hardest thing now because we celebrate individual success maybe more than we ever have. And team success, it does carry the greatest gratification, but it might be the hardest thing to do, is to sacrifice to win. And so that's what I think hopefully they take away.
When you look at Steve Kerr and you see him in this documentary and knowing what you know about him now, having worked alongside him, can you see where the beginnings of his coaching philosophy and his athletic approach started kind of during this Jordan Bulls run?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know Steve. Steve's much more competitive. Maybe you guys already know that, but he's mild-mannered in many ways, but he's got a deep, deep level of competitiveness. And I think he probably enjoyed being around somebody like Michael in a respectful way. Obviously, guys like Michael, Kobe, guys like that, they demand it every single day. They don't take days off. And so you have to understand that's the environment that you're in. But I think Steve liked that. Steve gets most upset at our team when we don't compete. He feels like when we don't compete. And so he probably learned from Michael, from a guy that really never let his foot off the pedal. That probably became, after a while, becomes a habit. You know, playing with a guy like Jordan and a guy like Steve being around that, probably realized you have a responsibility. They talked about Jordan saying, I want to compete every night because I don't know if somebody's in the crowd for the first time watching me play. I think he actually did do that. It's easy. That's a nice line. But I think Jordan actually did that. I don't remember watching him phone it in. I don't know. I didn't watch every single game.
Bob, when he came back from that first retirement, he didn't miss a single game up until the second retirement. He played every regular season game and every playoff game in that stretch.
I mean, and that's not – and again, I was watching last night when they had an emitter restriction. You could feel through the TV how pissed off it was. I mean, you could feel – and you almost – you're almost yelling at the TV, like, let him play. Let him play. But you know, a guy like that, I'm just glad I got to see him. You know, I remember watching him play. And Steve forgetting to play with him. It's funny, the people that play, like even BJ, you talk to BJ Armstrong, and I talk to Steve about Michael. And it's almost like the first thing they say, or their first body language is they kind of shake their head and be like, that guy was just different. Like he... But the amount of reverence, you know, the amount of respect for his will to win is the biggest takeaway from anybody that was around him. It was almost like he just had this, you know, some players run out of gas or run out of the desire. It was almost like he had this boundless, endless reservoir of competitive desire. And I think that's what you get from talking to people around Jordan. It was just a constant edge. Where's the edge? How do I win? And again, thinking last night when they asked him about Pippen being out, and a lot of players would take the easy road. They'd say, what's going to do about Pippen? They'd say, you know what? I don't know what we're going to do. It's going to be tough. You know, we got to wait till we got to get to it. And Jordan kind of looked at the camera and he goes, I kind of like this. And you could tell. He did. He was like, I don't care. I give it to me. I want more. And so fascinating. I'm excited to watch the rest of it all because he, fascinating athlete. I mean, he's the, for my generation and probably many, he's the guy. You know, he was the one.
President of Basketball Operations for the Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers, kind enough to join us here on 95.7. The game. Bob, we appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on the show. Good luck to you, the team, your family, as we all fight through this thing. And we look forward to seeing you guys out on the court again soon.
Yeah, man. Well, everybody wants to do it, so hopefully we'll get back at it soon. Thanks, guys.